everything that has happened to you, to Hannah, to Janine and the others, to those poor Marthas, all of it, you're responsible.
You don't own me. I'm not your property. So take a shifty little beady eye over me.
Your fault. Your choice.
Welcome to Eyes on Gilead, a weekly podcast dedicated to The Handmaid's Tale. There is a lot going on in this show, and we think it helps to talk it out after every episode. I'm Fiona Williams, and I manage our online coverage of movies and TV here at SBS, and I'm joined by my colleagues and fellow resistors, Natalie Handley, Managing Editor of SBS Voices.
Hi.
Sana Kadar, host of All in the Mind for ABC Radio National.
Hi.
And Haiti Island, Channel Manager for SBS On Demand.
Hi.
Hello.
So, we have just watched episode 3 of season 4 of The Handmaid's Tale, which is called The Crossing. This one is written by Bruce Miller and directed by Elizabeth Moss. Perhaps you've heard of her.
It was lovely meeting you, June Osborne.
What a doozy this one is. So, captured in Gilead, June faces a vengeful Aunt Lydia and endures a torturous interrogation.
You wicked, wicked girl.
Nick and Lawrence collaborate to protect June.
You owe me. You can't save her.
And in Toronto, Luke struggles with how to help June and Hannah.
I can't ask God for something that she didn't want.
That's a very bare bones synopsis of what goes on in this episode. And how are we 3 episodes into this season already? But anyway, around the room, quick, what stood out for you? Haiti, let's start with you.
Is anyone's standout not going to be Nick and June on the bridge at the end? That was my standout.
Totally.
But, you know, arguably not the biggest moment of the episode, but, oh, that was great.
Yeah, I would like to get into that scene. There's a bit to unpick in that. Minor thing, did anyone really scrutinize that mask June had on at the start? Sort of masks hit differently nowadays.
Don't they? They really do. You know what's funny is that, like, the mask that she was wearing in the previous season was actually just covering her mouth but not her nose. And I noticed this time that it's actually
covering her nose.
And I'm like, yeah, we have all experienced masks now.
Totally.
We now know how to do them.
That's hilarious.
Exactly. It was a nice heavy twill. It was a good closing at the end of it. Anyway, too much. So, yes, June is in a mask and it's picking up from the end of episode 2. She's in the van. Nick drops her off. But he's, of course, delivering her to old mate Lydia and saying that he wants her to tell where the handmaids are because, of course, they've gotten away and they're bound for that safe house from the last episode. But, Nick in the van delivering to Lydia. That eye contact was quite telling. What do we think?
I think it's an interesting episode in the sense that it has both Luke and Nick in it. I feel like we're seeing both of June's men and how they are responding to her in different ways. And they're both really in love with her. It's funny because my standout moment was actually a line from Luke, which was, June's in prison and we're lighting candles.
And we're lighting candles.
Which I thought was just fantastic. But yes, that moment with Nick in the van, like... it was a lot and I liked it. Of course I did. But yeah, it's really highlighting. I'm finding it interesting to see the difference between Luke and Nick and what their roles are and the fact that like Nick is in Gilead and has to play by Gilead rules and he's in a really difficult position.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, does everyone know that he's in love with her? Is this obvious to everybody?
Exactly. I was very confused by that makeout scene because how are they being so public? Like there's other people around.
Well,
what is going on?
Yeah, I got a theory about that. But yeah, I don't think it really happened, but I think it's just in her head.
I wondered if it was a dream sequence too, because I was like, this is crazy. What's happening?
Because the whole episode very much felt like a nightmare, didn't it? It felt like it had that sort of surreal element to it going from one nightmarish scene to another nightmarish scene.
Especially the Hannah scene, like that felt like, I feel like I've had nightmares where I can't reach out to my mother, you know, before as a child. Like that felt very nightmarish to me.
Yeah.
The whole episode had this kind of David Lynchian sort of nightmare surrealism thing going on for me while I was watching it.
Oh, yeah. No, it's just this elaborate series of escalating torture chambers and power games intent on, you know, making her talk and just ratcheting up the guilt and the pain and squaring that blame right on her.
So considering that the whole thing sort of felt like a nightmare, do you think that the bridge scene didn't happen? Like, tell me more. What?
Yeah.
Well, what's your theory then, Fiona?
Oh, well, just because it comes at the end, you know, she's suicidal by the end of this, being at the torture with,
yes,
with Lydia. And then, you know, she's remade as a handmaid, told she's going to go to a colony that's a breeding colony now. Like, she's back in. Hannah's rejected her. Like, she is at her lowest ebb. And then being delivered by the guardians. Like, Nick's not on that bridge. I think the fact that it's on the bridge, it's between the two worlds, and it's a bridge. And the fact that he tells her everything she needs to hear at that moment to not jump off that bridge. Like, I just think it... And also the swirly romantic music, and it doesn't ring true, is it? Like, Nick wouldn't be there in front of, even if they're sympathetic guardians and the van driver. Yeah, that's not something he'd risk.
The swirly camera.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a big romantic moment. That's a feeling. That's not a thing.
That's so interesting, because I was noticing that he was clearly, that he looked like a groom to me, you know, that he is like wearing a suit. God. He's sort of standing under an arch, the way that we could see the bridge, you know. She had to walk along the bridge to get to him. It was a really beautiful scene. Had very strong Jane Austen vibes, also picking up on, of course, Janine calling the pig Darcy as well, so I think I've still got Jane Austen in my mind. So I can see that if June was going to have a fantasy dream sequence, that it was ticking all the boxes.
I think it did happen, and the reason I think so is because a lot of this episode is about how powerful Nick is becoming as a commander in Gilead, in this kind of power vacuum. He is behind this interrogation, pulling all these strings. You know, he's the one pulling favors with Lawrence. He's the one getting Hannah in that room to get the response that he needs out of June. You know, I think he's becoming so powerful that he can kind of get away with being blatant about this relationship in sort of certain spheres and not suffering any consequences.
The tinge of sadness I had with the kiss was that I'm pretty sure it was a kiss goodbye. I don't know if we're ever going to see them together again. I don't know if anyone else had that feeling as well.
Yeah, no, I got that. Yeah.
No. Right. Mm.
Well, Lawrence sort of says that to him too, doesn't he?
Yeah.
That there's a line by the firelight in his house. He said,
"She is never coming back to you."
Yeah, and I think that's true. And I think the scenes with Luke, sort of, you know, he is her husband. You know, he hasn't forgotten about her, and he hasn't moved on, and he is being the very best husband that June could possibly hope for, really, you know, that, like, he's still fighting for her, raising her baby. And so, yeah, for me, seeing both Luke and Nick in this episode and the kiss at the end, I thought, oh, that's it. You know, they've sort of given us that, and thank you very much, creators. I appreciate it. But I think it's done now.
Well, that's heartbreaking.
You got your big pash. well, because her thoughts are with Luke as well when she's in the box. That's
oh my God, the box.
But yeah, again, she goes, it's a callback to that of Matthew episode in the hospital where Belinda Carlisle's song is going around the head. So her thoughts go to Luke as he's burying the green persimmon in the backyard.
That's his candle.
exactly, yeah. and I guess it worked, maybe, in hindsight. her thoughts are with both her boys in this torturous episode, which, I mean, I guess we have to get into the weeds about all the nasty business that goes on, but maybe I'm getting ahead of myself. I've walked over the standout moments. Sana, what was yours?
Well, if Nick and June are well and truly taken, I think I'm still in shock from that very last scene. Like, I think I'll have to go with the really obvious shock factor of Alma, who I just spoke about in our previous chat about really liking her. And now she's gone. And you know what? Actually, this episode had me having this really grim, like, continuing thought about, well, if I'm in this world, what's the best way to go? What's the least painful way to go? And actually being pushed off of a building, at least that's quick, you know? It's not like being drowned like Eden and, you know, being hit by a train, at least it's quick. It's okay. So Alma didn't feel too much pain in the end, I hope. Anyways. But yes, I think that final scene, that's my standout because I'm just so in shock about that.
Yeah, it was a biggie. Yeah, I mean, yeah, this one took care of Beth and Sienna and a lot of body count in this one. Okay, so Lydia. We had that standoff with Lydia that we knew was coming.
Yes, I'm kind of regretting that I said last episode that I think episode 3 is going to circle back to Lydia. And once we saw her, I was like, why did I say that? We don't want a Lydia episode.
100% same. When Lydia turns her back in the torture, you know it's not going to a good place.
Mm.
So in this episode, the forms of the torture, you know, Margaret Atwood always based the Gilead and trauma on true events, and Bruce Miller is clearly continuing that tradition because, you know, this one has pretty overt references to American rendition techniques and shades of Guantanamo Bay and Abu Ghraib and the whole waterboarding and whatnot. And they really go to town on June with this lieutenant who comes in to, they say, to press her for the location of the handmaids. Of course they want that, but also they just want to punish her because she she causes so much trouble in this place. The first stoush with Lydia, the "Did you think about how I would feel?" was a curious
wasn't
line, but
yes,
a very Lydia
I picked that up
line.
Too, thinking about how I would feel. And I just thought, wow, I think this relationship that Lydia has in her mind with these handmaids, her girls, I think she really is seeing herself as some sort of mother figure for them. Because why would they think about how she feels?
What's that about you, Lydia?
And how could she possibly think that she would? They would think how she feels? Like, how can she believe that they would care?
Yeah. And so, it's a good question.
And June picks up on that again later. Like, I think June finally got to have a great moment where the best she's felt in a long time was being able to finally speak back to Lydia and say, this was your fault. And she sort of found like a chink in Lydia's armor and she just went for it. Mm. And then like later on, she said how easy and quick it was to turn Janine, because this is what hurts Lydia, which I find so interesting. I think it's so interesting that we have found like Lydia's sore point.
Well, it did make me think that, you know, this has to get Lydia thinking more deeply about how alone she is in Gilead. Like, the commanders don't actually back her. Mm. You know, she's completely expendable to them. Her girls are not her girls. They don't love her. They don't care for her. So this has got to be starting to churn in her head, or has been for a while, and perhaps is part of what leads her towards her, you know, eventual role in overturning Gilead. Like, she's utterly alone without allies in this world. How long can you carry on like that without totally losing it?
And when June does end up talking, well, you know, she lies to them about where the girls go. Like, when the torture does come, she makes it look like it's working. You know how she says the girls are in a university library? I don't know, maybe I'm overthinking it, but I thought that was like a veiled reference to the testaments where Lydia's keeping her notes and like the library thing. I don't think.
Me, but yeah.
Yeah. I don't think that was in Vermont, but yeah, I was thinking of, hang on.
Nice detail.
I'm looking for testaments clues wherever I can find them. But yeah, I think I'm making them up at this point. And so picking up on that line that Lydia said, you know, "Did you think about how I would feel?" That's a variation is how Luke is this episode. Like, he's thinking, did June think of me, like when she made these choices? You know, we're more sympathetic to Luke.
As are Moira and Emily in the last episode when they're dealing with the fallout of the children that she's gotten over the border. Everyone in Canada is kind of, dealing with the fallout of what June's done and wondering if she was thinking about them in the process at all.
Yeah.
And I think the awful thing is we find out in this episode that not leaving was a mistake.
Yeah.
Because, like, Luke is grappling with June deciding to stay. And even as viewers, we can also grapple that and go, why? You know, why would she choose to stay? And so I think this episode is sort of really sort of confronting that one head on. And I think when she asks Lydia, when she says that she's ready to die, I know, Fiona, that you said it's because she's at sort of her lowest emotional moment. But I think I took something a little bit different from that, which is that she's now a liability to Hannah. Like, They will bring Hannah out and they will use her against her. And how far will they go? And as Lawrence says, you know, they don't care about girls here. It's just window dressing, you know. And I think she realizes now that, like, you know, she couldn't leave because she didn't want to leave Hannah behind. The idea of getting out and getting freedom and then never seeing her daughter again was just abhorrent to her. But now staying, she's actually causing Hannah harm in a different way, you know. Mrs. McKenzie said she was causing a harm in one way, but now June's causing harm in a different way. So I saw her bid for death less as a get me out of this emotional torture and more of a I need to sacrifice myself now. Mm.
Yeah. No, totally. That's a good read. It's all wrapped up in there for sure. Yeah. Oof, so heavy.
But it also gives June a reason, you know, to flee now, to leave.
Yes, yes, yeah. Yes.
So back to June, her fib is found out, of course, so they ratchet up the torture. Up to the rooftop they go, and we find Beth and Sienna, the Marthas from the Lawrence's house. You know, as Marthas, they are expendable, and they are dispensed with very quickly. June doesn't even get to say. Completely pointless, and other than to prove the point that they can torture June by torturing other people. It was at this point I kind of reflected, why are they keeping June alive? Like, why are they going to this elaborate lengths to torture her? Like, she's always going to try to strike back against Gilead. And I guess Lydia answered that in that they need a handmaid, but at what cost? Mm. Did anyone else think, why are they going to these lengths?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think for seasons now, people have wondered how June hasn't ended up on the wall yet. You know, she just has this magical sort of like safety net around her somehow. Partly, I think they take pleasure in the torture that they sort of mete out on her. And being alive is a greater punishment than death. But you're right. At what point will that sort of tip over where she's a bigger pain in the ass than she is anything else, you know? And they're like, off with you now.
Considering that she has a level of notoriety in Gilead, in one way, if they kill her, it's almost good PR for them. But maybe right now they think having her under control is better PR, you know? Like, I'm just trying, because I can't fathom it either. Like, why is she still alive?
She'll be a martyr otherwise, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, they risk martyring her if they kill her because, you know, getting those children out has already made her notorious. She's causing rebellions all over the country. Yeah, they're going to martyr her.
But I think the fact that, you know, she's still trapped in Gilead, she's not in Canada, she still already has this sort of air of a martyrdom around her in Canada. She's still this mythology because they can't actually see her or get to her. So I don't know that that's got to be all that of a huge driver for that, because that's still already kind of happening.
And also, like, there's that scene with Luke and, you know, the American government in exile, that the rep there, he has the conversation with, where she says, we may never know, actually, the outcome of the trial. Like, they could kill her and that may not filter through to Canada, which I thought was, you know, another nod to, you know, American policy here of the rendition and not just America, like just the policy of lack of trial and lack of due process here.
I was thinking more about the effect killing June would have within Gilead, not outside of Gilead. Obviously, word spread quickly within Gilead that June was involved in the children escaping. So I think word would also spread quickly if she was killed off.
Mm. Yeah, for sure.
But that scene where Luke is told that he would likely never find out, it was also sort of, for me, a reminder of why June stayed, because if she did leave, it would be giving up ever knowing what ever happened to Hannah, which sort of made sense to me to go, yes, this sort of reinforced to me, yes, this is why she chose to stay, which sort of harks back to that.
Yeah, and it surprised me that that didn't occur to Luke. I mean, I know he's feeling very sorry for himself, but I would have thought, you know, in some way he would recognize that, of course, she stayed back because of Hannah. You know, it wasn't she chose not to be with Luke, it's she chose to be with Hannah.
Yeah. Yeah, true. He doesn't mention Hannah in that moment, does he?
No. Does he? Isn't that weird?
He's quite fixated on June. I'm sure that scene's coming. and then we get that scene with Nick and Lawrence in Lawrence's house, and that's the most dialogue Max Minghella has ever had in this show, that scene.
Give me more.
Yeah, like, it was very good. You know, that's where we get, okay, that's where his head's at, and it shows he does love her, whether or not he actually says it to her at the end of the episode or not. But, you know, he speaks to how June has changed Gilead and has changed both of those men in the room. And then he gets all quid pro quo with Lawrence being transactional about, you get to keep your house if maybe you do me a favour and try and save her. He's been watching. He's been observing these years.
What does Lawrence owe him?
Well, he spared him last episode, or in the opening scenes where Lawrence was going to be killed, and then he negotiated to get him saved.
Right, so.
And get him on the council.
Yeah. And if you want to keep your nice fancy house, then you have to do me a favour for June.
I really enjoyed seeing Nick flex his power in that way, because we haven't really seen that he has it in him, you know. It was that sort of switch up that he did where they were just having this nice fireside chat, which was driving me crazy because June's in a dungeon and they're having a nice fireside chat. And I was like, oh, my God, this is infuriating. And Lawrence, who always gets the best lines, right? So, like, Nick says, I want her to stay alive. And Lawrence says, yeah, well, it's always nice to want things.
It's always nice to want things.
But then Nick does that sort of change up where he realizes he sort of has room to make a bit of a power move, and it works. And I'm like, yeah, go for it.
Mm. Yeah, go for it, Commander Blaine. And so he does. But in the meantime, June's in the box, and that's where the beeps and the drips set her off onto Belinda Carlisle territory again. But then comes out to dinner with Lawrence, and he's as smug as ever. But that's where the bombshell drops, that they're willing to hurt Hannah, as you say, Nat. And, you know, in another nod to US politics and politics in general about faux family values, he calls it for what it is, that Gilead would absolutely hurt a child for a power play. That was a good scene.
Yeah, and it made me wonder, power to what end? Like, what's it getting now? Like, where is this, its power derived from, and what is it winning over now? Like, because it just looks like they're at war with each other rather than sort of anyone else at the moment anyways. Like, what is this? What is the purpose of this power then? Who's benefiting? What's it doing for you? Because it sounds like everyone is miserable except for like five guys in a house somewhere, you know? I just had me questioning the whole thing. Like, if it's not about children, what the hell is this about? Like, I know it's not about children. We've known that for a while, you know, when they killed Eden and all the rest. Yeah. But what is it?
It's funny you say that, because Bruce Miller actually wrote an article last year which was about power and domination. I'm sorry, I'm going to need to reread it, so I hope I don't give a false account of it. But it was, as someone who writes villains for a living, the shocking thing in recent years in America has been seeing people just enact cruelties just because they can. It's not because you know, villains are always given these like really big sort of like ideology which they are following, which is the reason why they are causing atrocities. And sometimes, you know what? You don't need the big reason. People just want to be cruel. Yeah. And they just like the feeling of power and they want to enact it on others. And then there are those who savvily align with them, so they aren't the ones getting hurt. So it's which is all kind of messed up psychology. And I think that's sort of what that conversation was, which was like, yeah, as I said previously, this is all window dressing. It's all just bread, you know, bread and babies, but it's not really. Like, it's just at the end of the day, it's just men with power, yeah. and that's it, and that's all it is.
That's just so sad. Like, you know, to not have a better rationale for it. Like, I feel like, you know, as humans, we need stories and explanations and all the rest, and that's just such an empty explanation to me. I can't wrap my head around it.
Power begets power.
The other one that was sort of brought home to me was, okay, so that, like, that demon they've got in the basement who's torturing people, when they actually let him on a roof, and they should never let him on a roof, he says something, he says like this sort of like Bible line, you know, like thou shalt not like steal and lie and something else. And I'm like,
yep.
But you can pull out fingernails and throw people off ceilings? Like roofs? Like what? Like, it was just...
Yeah, there's no quotes about that, so it's okay.
Can we just take a moment to step back and appreciate that, like, masochistically glee Uncle Steve Jobs interrogator guy? Because he was fantastic. Like, what the hell was going on with him?
Grin.
What a character. It was
totally.
I was getting the brutalist architecture of that, you know, torture center, and then this, gleeful maniac interrogator. I was getting, like... Batman Returns vibes, you know, like it was so theatrical and over the top and surreal at moments. I loved that character. You know what? Actually, he was my standout.
Characters like that are just giving skivvies a bad name, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the beige skivvy was a nice touch too. It was so neutral. And he was like a smiling uncle, but he'll pull your fingernails out and waterboard you. So yeah, it was.
I was thinking that, you know, by the time if your organization has a need for a man with talents like that, you've really made some bad calls, you know?
Yeah, I want to know what he did in the before time.
Ooh, backstory of the beige skivvy man.
Wow. What a crazy night, huh?
Yeah, good Lord. Okay, but then, of course, June tells Lawrence unceremoniously to go fuck himself, and then she is confronted with Hannah in the glass cage. And that doesn't go as well as she had hoped, and that's an understatement for the ages. To Hannah, June is the scary lady who left her years ago, and God knows what she's been told about her in the years between.
Do you think Hannah actually knows her at all? Because I was thinking she looked like a woman who was, you know, badly dressed in chains. She looked frightening. Like, she looked like she, like, I think,
yeah.
I think you do raise children to be afraid of people who look like criminals.
Well, remember they also met briefly at the house when June was heavily pregnant. Yep. They'd arranged that meeting then, and Hannah confronted her and said, "Why did you leave me?" You know, whether or not she recognised her as the tortured woman in the basement, that's open to interpretation. Not sure, but yeah, they have seen each other since in those years.
Yeah. I was wondering. I thought Hannah's reaction was probably realistic. Yeah, but I was wondering whether she actually recognised that it was June, her mother. So yeah,
I think she recognised her. But yeah, June is the lady who left her, and June also looked like a ghostly apparition. Like, she did look like complete shit, right? She was terrifying looking. So I think to me it was a bit of those two sort of factors.
Yeah, and you know, Hannah is being brainwashed and, you know, incorporated into the Gilead ways. And, you know, we know that from reading the Testaments. She's a true believer. She's, you know, converted. So she's along that path when we see her here. And I was also relieved to see that she is actually still wearing her kind of light pink Gilead garb.
Yeah, same.
And that shot from the trailer was from this scene, but it looked a lot more washed out. So yes, I was relieved to see she's not wearing the kind of bride's white linen yet.
Yes. Yeah, happily. Yes. on the timeline, she's still a little kid clutching her teddy or rabbit or whatever that was. And, of course, this is June's Achilles heel. Like, Hannah, she is the reason that she starts talking. She gives up where the handmaids are hiding out. And so we do see that Janine and Alma and Brianna and the rest, they're found in that safe house.
I thought there was some wonderful aesthetic decisions in this transition to the Hannah scene as well, because for the interrogation process, June's been underground in this red lit, you know, womb-ish bunker space. And when she goes into the room with Lawrence, the ceiling's covered with these round white lights that I think are meant to be echoing the lights that are on the balcony or the porch where Luke is sitting in Canada. They're the sort of same round lights there. And then when she comes into the room or the space where Hannah is, all the lights are blue and white, and it's sort of this emergence into this, in this kind of clear space where she's seeing the truth finally, that Gilead doesn't care about children. I thought it was kind of wonderful transition of lighting there.
Yeah.
And that ceiling, you know, above the where they were having dinner, like, that was a cage-like lattice sort of pattern on the ceiling as well, like sort of showing them caged, literally, you know, in a way.
Yeah. So many beautiful touches in this.
Lizzie Moss did a great job.
Did she ever? Yeah. No, I think it's wonderful. And, you know, in the horror side of things, like you mentioned David Lynch, Haiti, you know, I thought of Saw. Like, each room is just like a new torture chamber. Yeah. And, I mean, there's a nice nod there back to The Invisible Man that she just made with Lee Whannell, who did Saw. Yeah, then speaking of which, it's back to being tortured by Lydia, and Lydia comes full circle and gives it right back to June in a bit of a mirror of how the episode opened, where June was pushing Lydia's buttons. Yeah, Lydia's back to revealing that she's going to be bound for a breeding colony, telling June to buck up, don't feel suicidal, she's not going to be killed. She's only going to be sent off to a breeding colony.
Which I think she called, like, a great new adventure.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know, it strikes me as the worst idea ever for Gilead to put all the troublesome handmaids together and then have the commanders pop over once a month. And Lydia does say she didn't really love the idea as well. But, yeah, anyway, it is such are the workings of Gilead.
It is interesting, these little revelations that, you know, children are so light on the ground now that they can't afford to kill any more handmaids. So June's being spared. And, you know, June finds out that she's inadvertently helped Lawrence by killing off a bunch of commanders at the country estate Jezebel's because now commanders are so thin on the ground that Lawrence is still needed. So he's kind of getting overlooked for punishment. Yeah, all fantastic little insights.
It's all coming up roses for him.
Gilead's going great.
Yeah, I know, I love it. Well, keep doing what you're doing, June.
In the books, they sort of refer to various purges that there is that like Gilead would go through a purge where a whole bunch of commanders would get killed off, and I think there were multiple purges over the long reign of Gilead. And so I sort of, this episode sort of, I think at some point someone alluded to the fact that a purge has already happened. I wasn't sure if anyone else picked that up. But, you know,
no, I didn't. That. When was that? Who did that?
Okay. Damn it.
I can't remember, somewhere.
But it must have been Lawrence saying something, and I thought, oh, a purge has actually happened.
Well, do you mean though the Jezebels from last week? Because he says that 9 commanders are in hospital and there's others dead, and that's her actions at the country Jezebels last week.
I'll have to go back to it now and report back next time. Mm. I was just wondering because you guys are normally better at me at like picking up the finer points like that. So I thought you might have noticed. So maybe I've got it wrong.
Purge might be the Gilead sanitizing of water actually murders.
Oh yeah.
You know, maybe June poisoning a bunch of commanders at Jezebel's gets called a purge so that Gilead can kind of claim it as their own actions or something.
Yeah, 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 for their sinful behaviour. So they're calling it a Magdalen colony. So rather than send them off to the colonies, which, as we know, is a radioactive waste dump, it's kind of a hybrid model where it's like they're going to toil the land until time comes for the god-awful ceremony for what Lydia calls a blessed circle of service. So, yeah, rather than spend their downtime causing trouble in their households, they can actually be put to work. So, Jesus. Was that a Lawrence suggestion, I wonder?
Well, yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? Because it does sound like something he would have actually come up with. Because I remember that the women who were sent to the toxic waste dump lands, they were the ones who were still young and fit enough and able enough to be doing that work. Whereas June's mother, I think we saw at some point, and she was sent to a different area where women of her age were instead growing vegetables. Uh-huh. So I wonder if that's the sort of place where June is going. Did we ever find out what happened to June's mum?
No, because I still hold that hope that maybe she's still alive. But yeah, I don't know.
And I assume we're not going to see Esther again.
No, we are, because she's got a reoccurring role this season.
Oh, does she?
Is what they've said. Ooh. So. As far as I understood, she'd signed on for a bit more than just, the first two episodes. I might be mistaken there, but I'm pretty sure she's got a bit more to come.
Is there not mention of her? Someone mentions that she's sort of in custody somewhere.
Been captured, yeah.
Nick says that at the start. Yeah, so we'll hopefully see her down the track. She did get a big introduction, so it would be weird to just have everything else off camera.
She's a great character and a fantastic performer as well.
Yeah, yeah. So then, to prep her for the start of this new adventure, as Lydia calls it, June gets hosed down and we see her bruises and her scars as these god-awful robes get put on her again, and she dons the cap and presto, she's a handmaid again.
Which kind of felt necessary in the show because it is The Handmaid's Tale, and so far we hadn't gone back to the handmaid world. So so seeing the red robes again and the white hat it felt like touching back on to actually what's going on with the handmaids. But what happens from now, who knows?
The opening few episodes have had a bit of a season two echo for me. Like, you know, she was out and then, of course, she got trapped again. She's back in. But she's out again. She's on the run. So then, you know, the bridge scene, I think we've interrogated that bridge scene unless anyone else has got more thoughts.
Loved good. It.
Yeah. That's my thought. I mean, it's a beautiful thing. Don't get me wrong. I just
I've got to go back and rewatch it now to, you know, make sure that I'm still convinced it's real and not a dream.
I like that it's fake. Yeah. And then the birthmobile, or is it a birthmobile when no one's pregnant? Not sure, but that red truck
shows up. It's a handmaid-o-bile.
Yeah, that'll do. And it's got Lydia and Alma and Brianna and Janine in it heading for a crossing. Remember, the episode's called The Crossing, and with a guardian who needs to go to the toilet.
I wondered if he was in on it or something, if he was, you know, for a second I was like, did he plan this? Did he? Yeah, anyways, but I don't think so.
I was thinking that too.
Yeah, I think they wonder it too. Yeah.
Until he shot one of them, and then I was like, no, this was just, you know, luck.
And doofus who had to go pee.
Yeah. Yeah, dumb luck. Which kind of goes, not to harp on the Nick thing, but I think like, you know, I don't think there's a connection between those. And I think the handmaids were also looking at each other like, is this Mayday? Is this a thing? Yeah, shoot your shot when your driver takes a toilet break. Make the most of that very brief time and grabbed that cattle prod and put it to Lydia's neck. And wow, June really does.
You know how we've talked about how like June, or at least I mentioned last episode, June can sort of leave a trail of bodies in her wake depending on her actions.
Yep.
And it kind of made me wonder, like, you know, that delay where she's sort of contemplating whether to use the cattle prod on Lydia and Alma comes and says, come on, you dummy, we got to go, get the, you know, miss the train or, you know, cross the train. Is that like, you know, is that slight delay enough to have meant Alma was just a little bit behind and got hit by the train? Like, the, you know, that I can't help but have that thought.
Yeah.
I mean, I love June, obviously, but, you know, Alma was prodding her to come along.
Yeah, seeing Alma.
Yeah. Oh, you snooze, you lose. Like,
it's horrible to think about June's body count, which is still rising. And so when I was sort of thinking about that in this episode, like I was originally going back to the two women who are on the roof, and I just thought, can't blame June for those two because I think those women were already dead, unfortunately. Especially because you think if you have the Hannah option, why would you kill two women first if you didn't need to, you know? So I think clearly those women were already scheduled to be executed, and this way they just got to mentally torture June a bit in the long run on the way.
Agreed.
But yeah, this is a horrible thing. You know, in one way, Luke planting that fruit in the ground, you know, to give June some luck might have actually, you know, we can look at that and think maybe that led to her escape. Mm-hmm. But, you know, June's good luck always seems to come at the expense of other people. Mm. And that's the horrible thing about it. That ending was, I don't think I've still properly processed it actually, because it was so brutal and sad.
Yeah. I think I was just saying in the last episode that the tone of those first two episodes was a little bit different, and maybe that they'd taken some cues from people tapping out last season because it was too much. And then the final scene in this episode, I just kind of went, oh, nope, that was wrong. They're going there. This is really hard.
Well, I think they have to, right? I wouldn't think it's The Handmaid's Tale if it was all kind of brief. Like, you know, the first episode, yes, it was an easy entrance back into the season, but to me it almost was like, hang on, nothing really all that much happened here. I'm confused. Is this the same show? What's going on? So, you're kind of always bracing for that, hey?
And I think at the end of this episode, I think what I'm really grateful for is that I didn't actually have to watch a fingernail being slowly extracted because I was covering my face with my hands going, no. So they did spare us some torture.
Yeah, I mean, waterboarding aside. But yes, no, there was a shot of her nails after that, and they were quite well intact. that ending. So yeah, that guardian, he shoots to kill, and you know he does get one of the ones at the back. And Lydia clearly is screaming. You know, like he didn't need to shoot them, but also he didn't need to shoot to kill because of the shortage of handmaids in Gilead thinking. But yeah, so June and Janine make it across. So
yeah,
Janine. And, of course, we knew Janine would because we've seen the trailer. But this episode has used up a lot of those shots from the trailer.
Yes.
So only a handful left that we can use to speculate who's going to be further down the series. And then the very ending is back to the book and back to the Red Center, the early days, to show the bonds these handmaids have. And that's where I lost it. I had a little cry in that bit, I must admit. And I think it was also the sad chords of the score they use at this. I love that score that they play at moments like this. It, as they mouth their names to each other in that secret code they'd sort of developed to be able to speak in the circumstances where they can't talk to each other. So, yeah, I just thought that was such a beautiful ending, a nod back to the book and speaking to the handmaids who we just saw.
And this group that, you know, has been intact since season one, mostly, you know, people here and there have managed to escape. But, like, you know, Alma and the rest, they've sort of, and Janine, obviously, have been around since day one.
Yep. And then that shot at the end, just before it goes to that, like, we do get a bit of a drone shot to look at. I was trying to look at where all the bodies were strewn and see if anyone actually survived it, but.
Yeah, same. And you couldn't really see.
Yeah, you couldn't really cut just as it got to Lydia and some red there. But yeah, so wow, that was a biggie. What do we make of the direction on this? Yeah. Elizabeth Moss, she does three episodes this season. So it's like she does 30% of the season. So she also does a block of episodes 8 and 9 coming up. So just before the finale. And I was part of a Zoom panel when they were launching the season, and it was Bruce Miller, Elizabeth Moss, and Warren Littlefield. They were talking about her directing this season, and I've got a story up at SBS Guide to get those quotes. But originally there were talks to direct in season two, but, you know, they got pushed because, of course, she's executive producing, she's a star, very hands-on in all respects. And then when COVID happened, Warren Littlefield said that, you know, they were very nervous in case she got COVID and, you know, they didn't want to kill her for any reason. But, you know, she was saying, I'm working 7 days anyway. You know, I'm living this show, living and breathing this show. So just, I want to direct. So obviously with COVID and the lack of other directors probably flying in as well, the opportunity was there to do more. So, yeah, I think she's absolutely lunched at it. Yeah, I love this episode. It's right up there with some of my favorite episodes, I think.
Yeah, I thought so too. Yeah, I really liked it as well. And I always feel awkward when I say I really like an episode and it features women dying. You know, there's always that awkwardness about that. But yeah, like as you said, the score was great. All of those weird, surreal basement scenes. Yeah, it was really interesting. I think they all did a great job.
Yeah, it was a good episode.
It had a really strong sense to it. I did appreciate the surrealism in this one. Yeah, kind of did.
Yeah,
did
yeah.
Kind of that really torturous June psychological journey in a much more effective way than something like the heroic episode from last season where she's in the hospital with Off Matthew. I think this was much more successful.
Yeah, but I think that's also because there was a lot of plot action here too. Like, it wasn't just the psychological internal stuff. There was actually a lot happening as well. Whereas that hospital scene, it was the samey for an hour and you're like, oh my God, make it end.
Yeah, but I think we don't get to this one without that one because it, you know, nods back to it and that was all part of her realizing, you know, that there's more to this and now I'm starting to understand how it all works. But, yeah, wrapped up together, I would take this one. So where to from here? You know, Janine and June are on the run.
I don't know. Are they out? Are they in? Are they free? Are they not? Oh, my God. I can't tell anymore.
Such big kind of ties severed in this episode with kind of the severing of her, of the hope that she has in Hannah and Hannah's kind of immunity and... You know, potentially the severing of her contact or relationship with Nick in that possible farewell kiss. And then, you know, the severing of the handmaids who have been together since day one. You know, it's just Janine and June now.
Aww. Yeah, because I wonder about that too because, like, the show was great when June gets to interact with all these characters and I think that's what we had in this episode, you know? Like, she got to interact with Lydia, she got to interact with Nick, she got to interact with Lawrence.
Yeah.
And even Hannah as well as Handmaids. And now what? You know, like, we're now heading into this other realm where it's just her and Janine. So who will she be interacting with? And I can't imagine that it's any of the regular characters. So...
Friend Serena.
Yeah, I'd like to think there's a reunion coming with, you know, everyone that's in Canada now. Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, because we didn't see any Fred and Serena this episode. So, that, you know, I think we'll end up there next one. Because also Fred hasn't had the happy news yet. He doesn't know he's the baby daddy.
Can't wait to see his reaction.
Someone mentioned last episode that what if maybe Rita ends up testifying against Serena and I've just forgotten his name. Fred. Anyway, Fred. That would be amazing. Like, I really hope that happens. That's the sort of Rita storyline I am here for.
Yeah, I second that. All right. Well, I think we've well covered episode three. So thanks for listening. We hope that helped. We're off to bury some green persimmon in the backyard. seems to do the trick here. So look, thank you to my co-hosts, Sana Kadar, Natalie Hambley and Haiti Island. And thank you for listening. It is so good to be back. And we'd love to know what you're thinking as you're watching this new season along with us. So do reach out on Twitter to tell us what you're thinking. And remember to use the hashtag #EyesOnGilead so that we can find it. We'll call out some of your best tweets along the way. And you can find me at anythingbutfifi. Sana, where can we find you?
At Sana_Kadar.
Haiti, where can we find you?
At Haiti Island.
And Nat?
At Natalie Hambley.
So we will be back to recap episode 4 of season 4 when it drops on the 6th of May. And thereafter, new episodes of The Handmaid's Tale season 4 will be here when they premiere every Thursday on SBS and at SBS On Demand. And also this season, if you speak other languages or if you know someone who does, SBS On Demand is also subtitling the series in Haiti. This is your territory. What languages is the series going to be subtitled in?
It will be subtitled in simplified Chinese and Arabic.
Wow. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. And while we have you here, feel free to leave some feedback and give us a rating on the podcast app. It helps other people to find the show. So across this season, if you just can't get enough of The Handmaid's Tale and you want some more coverage, head to SBS Guide, where we've got some recommendations for other things to watch as you await the next episode. And as I mentioned, that interview with Elizabeth Moss will be available now that you've seen her at work as a director. And if you want even more recommendations of what to watch, you might like my other podcast, The Playlist, which I host with Ben Nguyen, and we talk movies and TV shows that are worth your time. Sana, what would you like to plug?
I'll plug my other show, All in the Mind. It's a show all about the brain and behaviour and psychology and the rest. It's on ABC Radio National and all podcasting platforms as well.
And Natalie, what would you like to plug?
The Voices website, which is sbs.com.au/voices. We give a platform to emerging writers of diverse backgrounds. And if that sounds like you, please pitch to us.
Woo-hoo. And Heidi, as channel manager of SBS On Demand, what's something that people should watch until we wait till next week's episode of The Handmaid's Tale?
Oh my goodness.
Put you on the spot.
I actually have something, by the way.
Okay.
Which is, during the recent Easter break, I watched Agora, which is on SBS On Demand, and that has Nick in it. Well, Max, I should say.
Oh my God, going straight there.
Check it out. Highly recommend.
I'm going to plug a recent SBS On Demand commissioned short form series that we've recently launched called The Tailings. It's a wonderful kind of gothic mystery set in northwest rural Tasmania. It's only 1 hour long, so you can watch it in one sitting, and it's fabulous. So that's what I recommend.
All right, so that's The Tailings, and that's streaming at SBS On Demand. Now, look, it's some heavy stuff that we talk about that's covered in the show. So if any of the content discussed brings up something for you or for someone you know, just be aware that there is confidential counselling and resources and support available via 1800respect.org.au in Australia. It's a fantastic resource, so do seek it out. So Eyes on Gilead is produced by me, Fiona Williams, and edited and mixed by Jeremy Wilmot. Until next time, don't let the bastards grind you down. You don't own me.
It's so wonderful being all together again, isn't it? Yeah.